Welcome to the Suburbs with Andy and Greg.
We kind of talk about the absurd or the ridiculous. So what has happened in the studio where you're not really throwing anybody under the bus?
Back in the early 2000s, I was making a record with Jimmy Reiser, and he's basically a one-man band. He plays everything himself, programs the drums, plays the bass, does the guitars, keyboards, vocals, building it piece by piece by piece.
So how's he do that live?
He has a band when he plays live.
Oh, he does.
And at this point in time, he was basically a solo artist. He had abandoned his career with Arista Records and was now just doing solo projects.
Okay.
So he'd lay down a drum track first and then start building it piece by piece by piece. So it was time to put 12-string guitars on one song. And in the studio, we have these large 8x4 fiberglass-filled baffles that are basically sound absorbers.
Okay.
To take some of the room out of the microphone.
I know guys built like that. Sound absorbers.
Exactly.
I don't know about the dimensions. But
and so he's out there with his acoustic guitar. He lays down the track. He's happy with it. So it's time to do something else. So I'm going to move the baffles.
Okay.
And as I go behind the baffle, at the same time, he sets the acoustic guitar against the baffle.
You're baffled by the move.
And I'm unaware that he has done this. And I pull the baffle away, and the 12-string guitar, the head stock, hits the ground. And the amount of tension on a 12-string guitar is exponential of a 6-string guitar.
Uh-huh.
And it literally exploded.
Wow.
You remember the cartoon El Kabong?
Yes, I do.
It was like that times 10. And the headstock snapped off. And I think either he or I said, well, I guess we're done with 12 string. I cried. It was a sick feeling. And he's like, Ange, don't worry about it. It's, you know, just stuff.
Wow.
$12,000 stuff. He took it down to the guy that built this guitar in Bloomington. His name is Ron Volbrecht. Took it to Ron. He goes, I don't think so. I think this one's done. She's a goner.
Oh, wow.
So Jimmy left it with him. He said, well, you know, if you get inspiration, see what you can do. And I think a couple of years later, he called Jimmy and said, I've got your guitar.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was buried in the backyard. Next to the cat.
Felt like it should be.
Felt like you should have been.
It was a horrible, horrible feeling. And so he did get the guitar back. And originally, he left it unfinished. So you could see the scar.
Oh.
As the story goes, if you're able to fix a headstock that way, apparently it's stronger.
Oh.
Because it's a single piece. And now the way he braced it inside, it's actually stronger. And the guitar still lives, still plays, still uses it. He eventually had Ron refinish the neck so the scar went away. It's a happy ending. Took many years to get from destroyed to
happy ending.
At the time, it felt like your worst day of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that happens. This story of the 12-string guitar is in Indianapolis studio/musician folklore.
Oh, is it?
Everybody knows about the 12-string guitar.
Do they know who pulled the baffle away?
Yeah, this whole story. Everybody knows the story of this guitar.
So you're famous.
Infamous.
It isn't the engineering capabilities. It's that you destroyed a 12-string.
Well, yes, I did.
In the comedy world, there is folklore of a guy who was a guitar act. I think he was in Omaha, and he was just being heckled relentlessly. And if you go to YouTube...
Let's put that up on the website so people can check it out.
It's a terrible video, but somebody happened to be recording the show. So this guy is just like dishing it out to him, and he's finally fed up, and he steps off the stage and El Kabongs the guy with his guitar. And it breaks, just like you're talking about. And so the body is hanging down. It's like an L-shaped guitar now. And you can hear the crowd just go, oh. Nobody liked him. I guess they didn't like him to begin with because they were all heckling him. And he was over it. And now they really didn't like him. And so he's on stage. He's back in front of the microphone. His guitar is hanging in half. And he said, well, he deserved it. And people in the crowd are like, no, he didn't deserve it.
A prop comic without his prop needs to go work at a gas station.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me of a joke. I'm going to give credit to Carl Perry on this. Back in the day, there was a guy pumping your gas for you at the gas station.
Yeah, I used to do that.
You used to do that?
My first job, pumping gas.
I think you told me that. Good Gulf Gas. Do you remember the name of the station?
Phillips 66.
Was it?
It was. And I checked the oil.
Yep. Washed the windows.
Washed the windows. And ran the charge slip, that embossing machine.
Yeah.
gave the customer theirs, and then you've got their credit card number, all the credit card numbers for every customer.
Back when the world was wholesome and you just like...
Didn't matter.
Didn't even think about...
Back when people put their social security numbers on their checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good place for it.
Totally different time, wasn't it? This guy used to be a porn star, and he was pumping gas. And every time, right before the tank was full, he'd pull the nozzle out and spray it all over the back of the car.
The money shot.
So the sick feeling. It was 4th of July weekend, and I was playing with the kids, and my wife was designing interpretive signs for a Rails to Trails project. It's a Sunday. She's just trying to clean up some stuff in the office, doing that design work, and we're playing. And that's one of the things I loved about being a dad was it was a chance at a second childhood, you know, and I had a good childhood other than being pulled over by the police or
the DNR.
All the other stuff.
Set that aside. He signs as being a wanted criminal on every lake in northern Indiana.
The rest of it was pretty groovy.
I could see your picture up in the post office there in Angola.
I get this wild idea. Let's act like we're water skiing, except we're on rollerblades, and one person will be on the bike, so they're like the boat.
Okay.
And then we've got this, I think we used a jump rope.
And safety first.
Yeah, right. And it's tied to the back, like under the seat. The person on rollerblades is a skier, so you can cut back and forth. If I was doing that with somebody that was my weight, it would have been pretty good.
You're the rider.
I'm the skier at the time.
Who's riding the bike?
Carly is riding the bike.
Oh, really? Okay.
In elementary school. So not enough weight. So I'm like pretending to do it, but I can't really do it because I was pulling the back end of the bike around and it was not good. So I said, well, why don't you be the skier and I'll pull you? And she said, okay. So we get on. We start out in front of our house. We aren't even halfway into the next yard yet, and she feels like she's going too fast, and so she said, Daddy, I need to stop, and does a face plant in the street. And she had her helmet on, and helmet doesn't stop the face plant.
Did she let go, or did you just keep dragging her down the street?
She let go.
What'd you say? Did you hear something? What is that noise?
And she starts crying immediately, and when she lifts her head up off the street, it's just blood everywhere. I can't tell what is causing the blood because there's too much blood. And I take my rollerblades off, ditch the bike in the neighbor's yard along with the rollerblades. I'm carrying her into the house, blood everywhere. You know, I had this relationship with my kids where they actually listened to me. It wasn't like my relationship with my parents where I'm like, bah!
You told her to stop bleeding.
I said, take a deep breath, be in your happy place. And she stopped crying and totally calmed down.
Like Zen.
It was that Zen moment. It was. I thought that the face plant drove her front tooth up into her gum.
Ugh.
So I call our dentist. I call Gary.
Gary. Yo, Gary.
And he's on vacation, and the voicemail was glitchy. So I couldn't get to the on-call dentist. 10-page letter guy.
Scott.
Scott has an uncle who's a dentist. And so I knew that, and so I call his mom and said, hey, this just happened. What is Norm's office number? I need an emergency dentist. She gives it to me, and I call, and we go there, and it's 4th of July.
The 4th?
The 4th.
Oh, my.
And so there are fireworks starting to happen, other than in my life. We get there, and the guy does an x-ray, and he said, okay, the tooth didn't get driven up. It got knocked out.
Mm.
Do you know where this happened?
I need a tooth stat.
I drove the getaway car. I do know where this happened.
Find this puddle of blood.
Yeah. And he said, well, if you can find the tooth, put it in milk and meet me here. And I said, okay. So I left her there. I drove home. I went right to the spot and the tooth revealed itself immediately.
The scene of the crime.
Yeah.
Can you explain to our listeners why milk?
Because of the calcium.
Okay. Good answer.
I got a shot glass, put the tooth in there.
Couple whiskey shots.
Sarsaparilla. Drove back there. He implanted the tooth, did a root canal on it before he put it back in. Put it in a way where it was against the jawbone, and he said the body will think that this is bone, and it will become a part of the jawbone
and grow.
And grow.
Yeah, there you go.
And then he's like whispering in my ear, this is like a 20% chance at best. It's better than nothing right now.
Right.
I said, okay. So we go home, we go back to that Zen place again, and I said, picture in the morning when you wake up and in the evening when you're in bed going to sleep, picture flowers growing and picture your tooth like a flower growing or other things that you see that grow and imagine that that's happening. And it worked. And that tooth grew and there was no noticeable flaw. She went through braces. Everything's great. When they take the braces off, it was jarring enough. It knocked it off the bone and the tooth died.
Wow.
So they just pulled it out. And then she had a retainer with a tooth in it until we could go through having a post put in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put the post in, and that took a couple of different procedures.
So my mind thinks, okay, she was probably thinking she was up 25 cents with the tooth fairy when it was out. Then back in, so was the tooth fairy involved in this tooth in and out ever?
No, no.
She's thinking, well, tooth is out, get some money, then back in. So then she loses the money, out again. Maybe it's a dollar at that point in high school.
Probably. I don't even know what it is now.
Probably 25 bucks.
Part of a retirement fund with inflation.
Yeah. Hey, Mom, where's my 20?
Hey, I'm supposed to get a house, aren't I? That was a molar.
Right. With a basement. On an unrelated note, I remember when Colorado was one of those first states to legalize marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
I think they may have been the first.
I think they were. Now look at us. We are a country going to hell in a handbasket.
Peyton Manning, he was at Denver, and when they legalized marijuana, he bought 31 Pizza Huts.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Thinking all the munchies.
Right.
He just didn't buy one. He bought 31.
I would think convenience stores, too.
Pizza Hut, the ultimate munchie.
I got a thing in the mail at my mom's addressed to me that was a big laminated postcard. Rain, sleet, dark of night. They wanted this postcard to make it through. It was like in cuneiform writing. I have no idea what the heck they were trying to say. But by the grace of God, they had a QR code on it. And so I did the QR code. It was like DoorDash for dispensaries.
Oh, my. And this is in Indiana.
Mom's mailbox, yes. I could throw a pen and hit Michigan.
If you had one.
Yeah, yeah. I thought, is that even legal? Because they said, plug in your zip code and we'll show you the dispensaries that are close and we'll deliver for you. Okay, I'll play this game. So I put it in there and it brought up all the Coldwater, Michigan dispensaries.
Gotcha. That's your closest Michigan dispensary location.
That's my go-to.
I don't know where the other ones are, but that's mine.
It's crazy because I just don't do it very much. They've gotten better. It's a commodity now. They do 2-for-1 deals. And so you get a package and it used to be 10 and they used to be like 20 bucks. Now they've got 20 in them. Buy one, get one free. And I'm like, more than a half a year's worth with that.
The opposite of shrinkflation.
Yeah, right.
You're getting more for less versus getting less for more.
Right.
God bless America.
No kidding. Where'd the rest of the economy go? Why doesn't it do that? Oh, man, that reminds me of my dad's rant about built-in obsolescence.
Which exists, I believe.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. They're like, wait a minute. So if we build a really good refrigerator, they're never going to be a customer again. So we need to build this so that the chip goes bad in 7 years. And they do. And then my dad buys it. And then I get the phone call when the refrigerator goes out.
Dad, it's probably a chip. I don't want chips.
Oh, man. The ice maker. There were different things related to that refrigerator.
The beautiful thing is that most people, certainly we do, buy that nice 5-year warranty. Mm-hmm. Well, you're safe there. It's because it's 7 years. It's a 7-year itch is when that stuff starts tumbling down.
Mm-hmm.
Related to refrigerators, but not related to built-in obsolescence, is that interesting fun fact that during COVID, they couldn't keep refrigerators in stock. And the repairmen we're so busy because typically some people at home open the refrigerator 20 times a day when they're working, but now they're opening it hundreds of times a day. And refrigerators were failing left and right because of everybody being home all day long, opening and closing the refrigerator.
That's their exercise. They're curled. They're working on their arms.
Refrigerator repairmen were super busy, and the salesmen couldn't keep them in stock because of the fact that people were wearing out their refrigerators from opening and closing them all day long. Back in the 80s, when I played golf more than I do now, I was invited to play in one of Bob and Tom's celebrity golf tournaments. And Bob is like a scratch golfer.
What?
Yep. He's good friends with Vince Gill, who's also like a scratch golfer. And he was there. Tom was there. Tom was not a scratch golfer.
Tom was scratching his head on why he was even playing golf.
I don't even remember who we were paired up with, but we were playing. And then we looked over to the right and saw a lake. And we're like, what is going on over there? And it was somebody with their golf bag throwing their golf clubs into the lake. I said, well, I believe that's Tom Griswold. I think that's the last time Tom played golf.
Wow.
In the middle of a round.
I don't even know what to say to that. He was so over it, he threw his bag and clubs in the lake.
Yeah.
If I did that, the DNR would come up and give me a ticket for littering.
Hopefully you had your lights on your golf cart.
Yeah, right. No, I was legal every place except I was littering. Alice Cooper wasn't there?
He was not there.
He could have been. He should have been.
Yeah, he too is a scratch golfer.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And he's not quite 80, but he's in his upper 70s in age.
You know, I always see those guys as timeless.
Somewhat.
Like Led Zeppelin. If I'm on Spotify and I'm playing something, it doesn't show them the way that they look now. It shows them the way that they looked when they released that album.
When you remember them.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then you see them like they're honored at the president's whatever, and you go, wow, how'd they get old?
They're ghouls.
Alice Cooper is.
By design.
Yeah, right.
Of all the things Vince Gill's done in his career, all of the successes and gold records and platinum records and albums he's played on, he says he was destined to be an Eagle.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure he ever, like, oh, I hope someday I'm in the Eagles. Now being in the Eagles, he's like, this is the gig of a lifetime. I mean, this is like what I was born to do.
And now they're quitting.
Well, yeah. So now he's back to playing golf with celebrity golf tournaments. Funny story, how Vince met his wife, Amy Grant.
You guys were going out for chicken?
We were not. Chicken knuckle soup. Amy was in the studio working on an album, and she was doing background vocals, and she was struggling on the high harmony. And somebody said, I think Vince Gill's a couple studios down. Let's go get him. He has a very high male voice. And he came in and nailed these high harmonies. And that was when they met, and it was just like lightning bolt for the both of them.
Oh.
They never worked together or collaborated. Vince comes in out in the studio, headphones on, and nails these high harmonies that Amy Grant couldn't get. Mic drop.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good story.
There's bands that you've probably seen back in the day that have those wall of speakers on the stage, Marshall stacks. Most of those are empty.
Really?
There's like one cabinet has a speaker in it. You just got to mic one speaker. That's all you need. Because the floor monitor is going to give volume to the guitar player. So it's not like he needs to have that many speakers on stage.
So it's just for show?
For show. To counter the visual of walls and walls of speakers, Geddy Lee from Rush took it one step further. His guitars had the wall of Marshalls, but instead he had a washer and dryer.
What?
As his bass rig. And you'd have a guy that would come out and take the stuff out of the washing machine and put it in the dryer during the show. Just a visual gag. He one time had a sandwich machine, a rotating sandwich machine on stage instead of his bass amp, because it's all direct. They have in-ears. They have floor monitors. They've got lots of ways to hear the bass. Instead of a stack of speakers, he had appliances. Check it out on YouTube. It's hysterical. The best part was the guy taking the laundry out of the washing machine putting it in the dryer. It's just having fun with the environment. I was up at, I'll call it Deer Creek. The Bob and Tom band used to always play an event up there back in the 80s called the Freedom Jam. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
And they did it for 3 or 4 years. And it was around 4th of July.
Right.
And it was the Bob and Tom band and their cast of characters, and maybe Carl Story will do a Faith Band song, and the Wise Store might do a song, and et cetera, et cetera. And then they would bring out like a a regional or national act of sort to kind of close the event out. So I was up there for a pre-production meeting with Tom and the people at Sunshine and the people at Deer Creek, just talking about the logistics of our show. And I hear something out in the arena, and we're sort of wrapping up. And I said to Steve Girardi, "Who's that?" They go, "Oh, it's Metallica. They're playing tonight." "Oh, wow, cool." He goes, "So you want to go out and check it out? They're sound checking." I said, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to." So I went out there, and they had stopped playing, tinkering around a bit, and went and stood by the soundboard, and the band fired back up. And it was the loudest thing I've heard in my life.
Really?
I would deem it to be deafening. Of course, it's an empty room, yeah. So bodies in the room do help.
Yeah.
But not help that much.
Outdoors?
I couldn't stay. I said, "Well, okay, this is loud." You know, I've been to some loud concerts. I was at a Deep Purple concert back in the 70s when they were holding the Guinness World Book record of loudest concert band ever was Deep Purple, and I saw them, and it was so much bass, I had to go move my seat to side. Back in the days of general admission,
yeah.
I had to go somewhere else because it was so loud. But this was unbelievable, and I'm thinking, how can the sound man put up with that? Didn't sound bad. It just sounded incredibly loud.
So does the sound guy have like one of those inner pieces too?
No. I mean, he should have earplugs.
Yeah.
You know, really. That was brutal. As I was listening to this, kick drum was just the worst part. It was just pounding. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, nobody goes to a concert to hear the bass drum.
Hi, this is Andy. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please be sure to subscribe and share. Remember, laughter is contagious. Help us spread it by telling a friend.